But just like last week, and like our sermon series in general right now, we're rethinking our relationship with our building, with our times of meeting, because that's kind of what we're having to do right now, no matter what. And that gives us a chance to think about, what does church really mean that God would give us that's most important, even beyond the resources we have, the spaces that we gather, and the times that we do things? That God gave us a character of community. God gave us special types of relationships and things to do and ways to be. And so we've looked in previous weeks at how we are like altars that are not just fixed in one place, but that are meant to be given out into the community. And altars that don't just give happy thoughts or judging thoughts to the community around us, but altars that look at the whole spread of human experience, and that we expect God will meet us there and help give us transformation. And through that transformation we experience, that we can offer transformation to the community as well. We've also looked at how church is like a tent of meeting, where we're able to have friendship with each other and with God. And that our friendship with God helps transform us and our friendships and relationships with each other and with the world around us. And so through all of that, we're able to do things that are sacrificial, that go beyond what we would normally expect, that we're able to accept and have bonds with people that we might not normally come in contact with or feel like we could easily connect with. And those are all amazing pictures of what God wants us to be as God's people, and that God enables us to be, even when we feel like that may not be possible for us. And this morning, in recognizing Mother's Day, I thought we would be good to look at what's really a fairly old, familiar image of what church can be, one that probably springs to many of your minds as well. And that's the church as God's family, and how we can be brothers and sisters with each other as well. So we're here in this space in our fellowship hall with a little mini coffee hour or fellowship hour set up as a reminder, because I think for many of us, at least in this particular building, it's this space that helps us most feel like a family, having those shared experiences, making those bonds together. And so I hope that helps us remember and visualize what church as a family means to start for us, and we'll look at it a little bit more as we go throughout the rest of this sermon. So, again, family is not a new metaphor for the church. In many ways, this is the first metaphor of God gathering people. God didn't create an army. God didn't create a country at first. God didn't create a business or another organization like that. God called Abram and said, I'm going to make you the father of many nations, many descendants. God created first a family, and that family became the foundation and bedrock of all the ways that God continued to work through human history that we follow throughout the rest of Scripture. Could have been lots of other things, but family was where God started. And so that does make it an especially important metaphor. Similarly, in the New Testament, even as Jesus opened up access to God beyond the nation of Israel and the direct blood descendants of Abraham to Gentiles and to all the world, and helped create new communities through what became the church, that the metaphor of family was foundational and central. Paul especially writes about how, because Jesus comes as God's son and then takes on the suffering and experience of the world, died and experienced resurrection and new life, and so ushered in a whole new way that we can be God's family, as brothers and sisters with each other, but also as brothers and sisters and co-heirs with Jesus to all of God's promise, all of God's ministry, all of the ways that the world is shaped through God. And so it's good that we anchor ourselves in that idea. But again, it doesn't necessarily mean that family is always the most direct or easiest metaphor. One of the first ways that, for me, I had the idea of family transformed was when I went to college. I grew up here in Central Ohio, in Worthington, actually, and then went to college in Tallahassee, Florida, at Florida State. And it just so happened that sort of the way that I got to Tallahassee was through a special program where they were trying to attract out-of-state students. And so the dorm that I lived in particular my first year, was all students who were part of that same type of program. And so it was all students that were coming through this from out of state, leaving home for the first time, figuring out what it was going to be to have a more independent life, where it was going to, more things were going to be more up to us. And we couldn't very easily just, you know, drive home for the weekend to go and visit family. So we really were thrown into a situation where we created an extended family, a new type of family together to support ourselves. And as people noticed that and sort of thought about how we all adjusted to our new circumstances, that was something that people joked about a lot. And we would sort of identify when we saw friend groups form who was playing the different family roles within that particular group. You know, who's sort of being the mom trying to take care of everyone? Who's the dad telling everybody what to do or taking on certain things? Who's the goofy younger brother that always just wants to mess around? All those types of images. Within my own friend group, people ended up calling me the kind of silent but sneaky grandpa. I didn't come out really extroverted at first with my friends. I mean, I got along with my roommates, my suite mates, and some other people in the dorm, but I wasn't the one who was most boisterous at first. But I would occasionally just sort of jump in with a comment about, you know, observing something, or maybe it was a joke. And so at first, there was sort of this idea like, oh, Rob's just kind of sitting there, sort of in the background, but then he'll jump in randomly with something that sort of puts us off or makes us laugh or whatever. And that was the thing, like, you know, Grandpa sitting in his big chair, sort of letting everybody else be crazy, and then he'll say one thing and kind of flip the attention and do it that way. And so that was the family metaphor that was put on me by some of my friends. And again, people all sort of found their way that that was true. We have families that take on their own identity. We have roles that we step into within those families, and it's not always just within our immediate family. We learn kind of what that looks like as we continue to expand our family. I know that stuck in my head too when I was growing up, because my mom always told stories when she was in college about that same general idea. She was called mom by all of her friends all through college, and so she said she knew I was going to have kids and be a really focused mom, because she did things like pack little snack bags for all of her friends when they did studying, and she checked in with them if they said, I want to make sure that I study, or I want to make sure I go and do this thing on Saturday afternoon. She would say, you said you were going to do that. Are you going to go do it? Go take care of it. And so that even prepared her for a role that she had later in her life, or she started to show some of those characteristics. And many of you may think of, both within your own families and within your other relationships, how you take on certain roles, how you build those bonds, and different ways that we support and care for and encourage each other. Of course, we know, though, that this metaphor is not always easy or simple or just happy. We're celebrating Mother's Day today, and most of the time, the way that we focus on that is the positive relationships that we've had with our moms or with other women in our lives. But I know from celebrating this over time with people that Mother's Day or Father's Day or other family gathering holidays are not always the easiest for everyone. Maybe you've recently lost a mother or grandmother or someone who was close to you, and so while you remember her fondly, it's also something that brings a bittersweetness for you when we come to these types of holidays marking things. Maybe for some of us, we've had difficult, painful, even harmful relationships with our mothers or with female role models and mentors in our lives. And so this brings some of those memories to mind, and we have to look to who some of those other important female influences in our lives have been. And it's good that we remember at these times that full context of what we all might be experiencing, and that we give those opportunities to celebrate those people and to also sit with and reflect and give support when some of those relationships are not always the best. And we know that that's something that God meets us with, again, because we see scriptures like this morning. It may have felt like this was a very downer, unusual scripture for me to pick today, especially lining up with Mother's Day. If many of you don't know the backstory, Rachel and Leah were the wives of Jacob, who was Abram's, right? That first family that God founded through Abram. Jacob was Abram's grandson. And so he was tasked to go out and find a spouse and to start his own family the same way. And he went to a nearby village, actually a distant relative, and said, I'd like to find someone to marry. And he met first Rachel. And Rachel was the younger sister. Jacob thought she was beautiful, wanted to be with her. And her father said, well, it's kind of against custom to have the younger sister marry first. So as long as you work for me for 7 years, then I'll let you marry Rachel. And so Jacob did that. But then the night of his wedding, he got a little tipsy, and his father tricked him and actually had the marriage be with Leah, the older sister. And then Jacob found out and was angry and said, we made a deal to have me marry Rachel. You tricked me with Leah. What's going on? And the father said, well, you've at least got a wife now. Let's work 7 more years, and then you can marry Rachel. And so then that happened, worked the 7 more years, married Rachel, and so then he was married to both sisters. But you can imagine and just hear from the transactional nature of those relationships, from the trickery between the father and also Jacob, how that would have impacted Leah and Rachel, how that would have impacted Jacob, how that would have impacted the family that began to be formed. And so then you could hear as they began to have children, the competitiveness that they felt with each other, the heartbreak that they felt with each other, and even in the names of their children, the ways that they wondered if God and those around them loved them, accepted them, would bless them, would help them be safe and not be potentially cast off. Of course, at first, Leah, the one who was not as desired by Jacob initially, has children. And so that seems like it could be an encouragement. But then also, Rachel, while at first favored by Jacob, then doesn't have children, and that becomes a risk because so much then was dependent on, can you have children to pass on our family line? Maybe especially with Jacob and remembering the legacy of his grandfather, Abram and Abraham, and whether or not he would be helping have those vast descendants that God promised. We don't have a lot of those same types of relationships now. We don't have multiple wives. We wouldn't normally try to marry between sisters if we were to have multiple wives. Our wives don't have servants that then might also carry children for us because we can't have children. And so the whole dynamic of being a slave and whether or not you would want to play that role for your owner and meet with her husband that way, and how the pressure that woman would feel and her role in the family, and how tense whether she would feel the connection with her kids that she would like. All of that gets so messy, and we can be thankful that those are not the types of things that might bring us pain and complication in our own family relationships now. But we have lots of our own ways that we know family can be really difficult. And that's something that God continued to work through and offer promise and hope and transformation so that family, as complicated as it was, as painful as it probably was, and rivalries between moms and between children and even then between servants and slaves, could still become a family that could become a nation that God would work through to bring God's people, to bring blessing to the people around them as he instructed Abram to. The family was not just for itself, but was to bring blessing to the rest of the world. And that God does seek to recognize and bring transformation to those problems that we have. And I know for me, I can think of some family situations that I've had in friends, in acquaintances and extended family members and neighbors, where those are not always the stories that we tell on holidays like Mother's Day, but they're stories of people's real experience. And even in the midst of pain and struggle, those are stories that we can celebrate and give encouragement to, that those are stories that still need recognition need family rallying around them to see something happen. Stories of kids whose parents maybe divorce and break up and they have to reestablish new relationships with each parent and then with new people that those parents might fall in love with, which is not always easy, but that those can create new, beautiful families, hopefully, from healing and transformation of an initial difficulty. I've had friends that had that even more complicated because even the church has not always looked great at how to juggle those family expectations. I had a friend whose father wanted to marry a new woman after he had divorced their mom, and he wanted their children, though, to be recognized a certain way by the church as legitimate, so he had to annul his previous marriage, which in the ceremony declared my friend and her brother, his previous children, as illegitimate. And that gave them a sense of stigma and acceptance and lack of acceptance. And so we can do things that complicate those circumstances rather than heal those. And those are things that as a church, we need to be really careful always to make sure that we're offering healing and acceptance and sense of hope and togetherness, even when things get complicated and painful. I've had friends who have had difficult relationships with their parents because of their experience of abuse and needed to have healing to reconcile relationships, to have people have their own individual healing so that they are better equipped to have loving family relationships, and that maybe even some boundaries need to be set up in the meantime that make that relationship look different than what we normally celebrate. But we can say that when God helps people transform themselves, change their behaviors, change their attitudes towards each other, change their ways of coping with difficult circumstances, that even when it's a long road, that type of family, that people finding healing, people being willing to set boundaries that are healthy for themselves, those are all ways that we can celebrate family, even if it's not what normally gets put on a greeting card or something like that. Similarly, some of us may have been impacted because of our parents or our own experiences with addiction and needing to have those relationships restored. Sometimes we also just stop getting along with our family, and we get in big arguments, big blow-ups, and we break our relationship that way. There are people in my extended family right now who are experiencing that and wondering, what is the next step of healing going to be that we can reconcile and not be separate anymore? All of those experiences of family are ones that God sees, that God puts God's self within and would want to bring health and wholeness. And sometimes those steps do start with some separation, start with some changes of relationships, and reconciliation comes after we can work on ourselves, work on our patterns, work on our relationships. And so all of that imagery, all of that metaphor is also part of what being God's family and as a church being one small section of God's family, things that we need to keep in mind. We need to recognize the experiences that people are having in their own lives with their family and how we can be a place of enabling that healing, of giving comfort when there's pain, of setting boundaries when boundaries need to be set as steps towards that healing, wholeness, and reconciliation. We also need to recognize our own capacity within a church to have arguments, to cause harm, to do things that feel offensive to people, to know that people may come in and out of our family at different times, and that hopefully we would seek reconciliation, restoration of connection, or at the very least, blessing of a new season, if a boundary actually is what works best for that relationship. Those things are often very hard for us to acknowledge when we're in a church family. We want to look only at how many people can we bring in, and what are all the amazing things that are happening, and if there's any conflict or any tension, can we kind of shove it to the side, which we know happens in our own relationships too. But in the church, God would ask us and empower us to say, this is part of what being a family is. We have to go all the way through it and experience it. But we know from our New Testament scripture this morning that Paul offers that God does take us all the way through, that God seeks to have the family of the church be a place where those things are acknowledged, but pushed all the way through. What God offers is an acknowledgement of all of those things that can tear us apart, and that we saw teared apart Jacob and Rachel and Leah and their servants and their children, and could have caused tension, right? Paul mentions we are heirs to the ministry of Jesus, reconciling us with God, calling us all one family. And so that family identity helps us break through those things that can otherwise separate us. Whether or not we're Jews or Gentiles, those people that seem to be automatically accepted by God, and those people that seem to be on the outside. We don't define ourselves in those ways anymore when we're part of God's family. We can all have access to that close relationship with God. And we don't have people who are better or worse because of their previous relationship or access to God. People are not broken down by slave or free. We don't have that those statuses anymore in our society, but it might be upper class or lower class. It might be white collar or blue collar, office workers or working class, whatever it might be, those things that economically in our status and how we're treated by other people, God also wants the family identity to supersede those things so that we don't hold those types of identities against each other and treat people differently or badly because they have different identities than us, that this can be a place of reconciliation there too. And when we have that reconciled, it enables us to have new life because we're not preoccupied with those things that might otherwise separate us or make us feel bad about ourselves. It enables us to show more love to each other. And that extends then even to the division between men and women, the expectations around, you know, the pressure of being the type of mothers that Rachel and Leah and that the slave were forced into, and then the type of relationship that Jacob was put in and expectations that he had as a man and as a husband at that time that led to a conflicted relationship where it was transactional, where there was favor for one and not the other. That God also helps us break down those types of divisions that might separate us or might cause tension or might make us likely to pick fights with each other. That this family is a place where we say, we know that exists out there. God will help us bring healing to those expectations, healing to those external divisions, and we can be a new type of family that has love and cooperation and healing through the pain for each other. And that then because we've experienced that here, we can offer it to other people as well. There's nothing that we have to hide in God's family, just like we learned with the altar earlier. We can trust that God as our Father is invested with his own deep care for us in helping us to go all the way through even our most difficult family situations. One last thing that I want to lift up as we think about being a family church is that I think in many ways for our church, that's something that feels pretty natural. And hopefully, as I was describing some of the ways that God in particular brings healing, reconciliation, beyond division, helps us be willing to go all the way through even tense or difficult times, that there were stories that came to mind of the seasons that we've gone through in this church. Some of you have gone through many seasons, many transitions of leadership, many transitions of people who are members and participating, many times where you pushed through something that was difficult together through your cooperation, through your desire to support each other, even when things were hard. And I hope that those bring you great encouragement. But one thing that sometimes happens with a family church is that we use that metaphor to compare ourselves with other churches, right? And so we're glad that we can be a family church that focuses on long-term relationships. We might say that's different than a big church where you can't know everybody. You barely know anybody when you go on a Sunday. You maybe see the people up on the stage and you kind of know who they are, but you don't know them in a relational sense. And so we're excited about that, and we value those relationships, which is important, that we want to make sure that any church would have good interpersonal relationships. We might be glad that we try to operate with family coming together to solve problems through our committees and our board and people all having turns on there, and that it's a little bit less sort of like a business where there's staff that are trying to do everything and just focusing more on a type of hierarchy or promoting things a certain way or putting on a show or whatever it might be, And so we feel like that's something that God has really helped us with, this type of metaphor, and we want to continue to stand on that foundation and celebrate that type of family, which I also would agree is important to do. Those are great images of family that help us hold our own identity and that we can be thankful for. But also it can be true sometimes that a family church that's familiar with those types of identities, it's easy for us to get a little focused on our existing family. And I want us to always remember that a family, when it's healthy, finds ways of connecting and supporting and growing those around us. We're used to the rhythms of family where kids grow up, they find new roles, they come into new responsibilities, and then they expand the family by bringing in spouses, by having children of their own, maybe even though by bringing friends and neighbors who are looking for support, who are looking for extended family, don't have it for whatever reason from their own, and those people become like family. Hopefully many of you can think of those people who are in your lives and are not your blood relatives or your legal relatives, but they know that they can come to your house. You know that they can go, that you can go to their house. You support each other. You care for each other. You've kept in touch, maybe even as you've moved to different parts of the country, because that relationship is so important, because that sense of support is so important, right? There are all those ways that we can continue to grow our family, to offer the health and blessing of our family to others, to be a part of that. And that's something that I think we should always try to remember as a family church, that we start with those things where we have those beautiful long-term relationships, we have that collaborative sense of making our community work, that we would also remember that we want to make sure that we're a place where we offer welcome, we even go out to offer the blessing of our community and our relationships to those people who would be looking for family, who have not always had support, who have not always had healthy relationships with those around them, and that are looking to choose a new family that offers them those same types of connection. That's a wonderful calling that we have as a well-established family church. And so I hope that those are things that you can think about. Remember your own personal relationships. How do we take that as a metaphor through God's calling, through God's leading, through God's empowerment into our community as well? And in particular, that we do that for people that might feel like they would be on the rough end of conflict in their own family, like we saw with Rachel and Leah and Jacob, or who are on the disparaging end of the contrast that Paul wrote about in Galatians, people who feel like they are less than because of part of their identity, whether it might be their gender or part of their identity because it might be their race or part of their identity because of the things that they do for their job or in the world, and that they feel like that keeps them from having connection, that keeps them from being recognized and valued and blessed. That those are the people that God says, I can help you break all of that down and offer acceptance and love and promise and transformation and acknowledgement to those people where they see themselves as my children and have a sense of identity that they never would have had if not for being part of your family and therefore of God's family. It's a wonderful blessing, I think, that we have. And so in that spirit, I hope that we can go into that, be thankful of all the people in our blood families, our legal families, our extended families this week, especially on Mother's Day, and also thinking about our church and those people around us that we can celebrate that same way. I hope that you would carry that spirit of thankfulness with you. We'll now go up back into our sanctuary to have a postlude from Vicky, continue to enjoy our music ministry, and also to carry the light of Christ out into the world to remind us how we carry these images of church that God gives us and the power of God's Spirit that God gives us to live the images out, even in remarkable, unique ways, that we'll see the light carried out to remind us of that.